This week in Enterprise Tech, we talk autonomous rail cars, IoT at CES, and we talk to Applied Excel about going beyond web crawlers. Twyatt on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twyatt, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 477 for January 21st, 2022, Journalism Beyond Web Crawlers.
This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by HackerRank. It's time to reboot your technical interviews with HackerRank's easy-to-use tools. With a pre-made question library, code playback, and built-in whiteboard, you'll be conducting better technical interviews and instantly identifying the right talent. Go to HackerRank.com/Twyatt to start a better tech interview for free today. And by Progress. Progress has the technology you need to secure, analyze, and integrate your applications, network, and processes. Find out more and download a free trial at progress.com/twit. And by Nareva. Traditional audio conferencing systems can entail lots of components. Installation can take days, and you might not get the mic coverage you need. Now, that's complex, expensive. But Nareva Audio is easy to install and manage, no technicians required, and you get true full room coverage. And that's easy economical. Learn more at Nareva.com.
Welcome to Twyatt, your source for everything that matters in enterprise technology. I'm Kurt Franklin, your host for this episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech, where we have an amazing guest coming on, someone who's going to talk about something that, well, can be elusive: facts. How to get them, how to make sure that they are, in fact, factual. And before we do that, I'm going to be joined by my co-host, Mr. Brian Chi, to talk about some of the news and why it's important. Again, let's talk with Brian. Brian, how are things down in your part of paradise?
It's wonderful. And you know what? There's all kinds of really cool things. Now, I will give a fast tip for anyone that has an electric water heater in their home. There is a little box called a little gray box by Intermatic. It is about $65 on Amazon. You can get it from a lot of places like Home Depot, Lowe's, Ace Hardware, and so forth. What it is a mechanical timer that turns your water heater elements off when you're not using it, like late at night or something like that. By getting aggressive and only turning the water heater on, the heating elements on, when you really need it, like before people go to bed or right before everybody wakes up, you can save upwards of 20% on your electric bill, because your number one soak for energy in your home is your electric water heater. Obviously, if you can go to a hybrid or heat pump or solar, that's even better. But if you're stuck with electric, that's a way to save some money. So that's my latest project.
That sounds like a great project. I'm a big fan of anything that helps me save money with electricity. Anything that helps me save money pretty much anywhere, to be honest. So it's a good thing. We've got more good things to come, but we're going to begin with the blips, where researchers have discovered a dangerous new firmware-level rootkit. Kaspersky researchers recently discovered the latest examples of an Amware-based rootkit hidden deep within the UEFI firmware of a computer at a customer location. The malicious implant, dubbed Moonbounce, was planted in UEFI firmware within the SPI flash storage on the infected computer's motherboard rather than on the hard disk like some other UEFI tool boot kits. This meant the implant could persist on the system even if the hard disk had been formatted or replaced, according to the researchers. The implant was designed to enable the deployment of additional malware on the compromised system. Now, other malware artifacts on the same system pointed to Moonbounce being used as a part of a wider cyber espionage campaign that Kaspersky researchers were able to attribute with a high level of confidence to APT-41, a known Chinese-speaking advanced persistent threat group. Security vendor ESET discovered the first firmware-level rootkit, dubbed LoJax, in 2018. This malware, like Moonbounce, was hidden in the UEFI firmware on an SPI flash. Since then, security researchers have found a handful of similar rootkits in the wild. Now, Moonbounce is the third publicly known instance of a malicious firmware implant on the SPI flash. Growing threat of firmware-level attacks, 83% of organizations in a 2021 survey said they had been hit with one, has pushed chip makers and hardware and OS vendors to introduce changes for strengthening their technologies against the threat. Secure Boot, for example, is one such system. The technology is designed to ensure that a computer boots up using only trusted signed pieces of boot software. Other examples include Intel's Boot Guard to defend against the threat of attackers making unauthorized modifications to boot-level software, and Trusted Platform Module, or TPM, a more than 10-year-old technology for ensuring system integrity during boot up.
Well, for the last 200 years, freight trains really haven't changed much. Massive locomotives still move relatively dumb freight cars. Certainly, rail fans could argue that plenty has changed. Well, they're not wrong. But from a distance, trains work pretty much the same today as they did in the 1800s. Well, that may change. The three former SpaceX engineers have placed their bets properly. Today, their startup, Parallel Systems, has emerged from stealth mode with a prototype vehicle that promises to bring advances in autonomy and battery technology to the relatively staid world of freight railroads. In the process, they hope to not just electrify existing routes, but also bring freight rail services to places that don't have it today. Well, what I find interesting is the increasing interest in adding electrical propulsion to non-car vehicles like rail cars in this article. But Thor Industries, the owner of Airstream, has just shown off a prototype of an Airstream towable RV with an electric axle that has the goal of increasing gas mileage for traditionally low mileage tow vehicles, but also letting smaller vehicles tow larger RVs. Add to this the interest in freight sleds, where electric autonomous vehicles is just a sled on which you can drop containerized freight onto. Bottom line is that there is a trend for less human involvement in freight movement, which seems to be appearing at the time of the right time with the pandemic-driven labor shortages. Or in other words, robotic drivers of electric vehicles might be filling in the broken links in our world's supply chain.
Well, here's some news. It's not a new three-letter acronym, but a new name in security. The company created from the merger of security firms McAfee Enterprise and FireEye will be called Trellix, with an aim to become a force in the field of extended detection and response, or XDR. Now, in March of last year, Symphony Technology Group, or STG, acquired the McAfee Enterprise business for $4 billion. A few months later, STG bought FireEye's products business for $1.2 billion in a deal that separated FireEye's network, email, endpoint, and cloud security products, along with their related security management and orchestration platform, from Mandiant's software and services. News that STG intended to combine the companies arrived last fall when officials shared their plan to create an organization with 5,000 employees, more than 40,000 customers, and nearly $2 billion in revenue. Now, Trellix's approach will focus on what it calls living security, or the ability to create technology that learns and adapts to protect against advanced threats. Some technology from the merger won't be included under Trellix. For example, STG is expected to launch McAfee's Enterprise Secure Service Edge portfolio as a separate business later this quarter, according to officials. This will include its cloud access security broker, secured web gateway, and zero trust network access. Well, that's it for the blips. We've got a bite coming up, and a pretty big bite. But before we do, it's time to hear from the head toad himself, Leo Laporte, as he tells us about a great quiet sponsor.
Thanks, guys. I'm going to interrupt for a bit because it's time to tell you about HackerRank. You know about HackerRank. I know about HackerRank. I love HackerRank. And if you are an employer looking to hire technical talent, you ought to know about HackerRank, especially this great free tool they're offering. Between deadlines and frustrating interview tools that aren't set up for technical interviews, conducting a tech interview these days is probably the last thing you have time for. And of course, you know, we're not even face-to-face anymore. You got to spend the first 10 minutes of your interview trying to set up an interview environment so you can share code from, you know, a bunch of documents. That's wasting your time. It's wasting your candidate's time. But HackerRank has developed something very cool. It's an IDE for the tech interview process. You know, an IDE, an integrated development environment, but it's for tech interviews. It's got an easy-to-use interview tools. It helps you find the best developers for your technical projects. What do you get? You get, with this incredible IDE, you get a pre-made question library with over 2,500 questions, which makes it easy to find the right questions for your interview. Takes a little bit of that, you know, cognitive load off. Then I think you're going to love this, a code playback feature. So if you've got a candidate solving an interview question, right, you can actually review their coding approach, score their skill levels in your own time, in your own way. Pause it, rewind it, playback. And there's also a built-in whiteboard. Sometimes you want that, right? You go up on the whiteboard and say, why is a manhole cover round? And you can see their logic thinking it out. This whiteboard built into the IDE, you can collaborate in real time so you can see how they're solving the problem. You can help. You can interact with them. A great way to do a technical interview. It's time to reboot your technical interview process. And no surprise at all, it comes from HackerRank. Click interview done. Right? Start using HackerRank free today. See how much better a technical interview can be. It's time to reboot your technical interviews with HackerRank's easy-to-use tools. With a pre-made question library, code playback, that built-in whiteboard, you're going to be conducting better technical interviews, instantly identifying the right talent. It's free! It's free! HackerRank.com/Twyatt. Go there right now to start a better tech interview for free today. That's HackerRank.com/Twyatt. We thank him so much for supporting this week in Enterprise Tech. Now back to the gang.
Thanks, Leo. We'll look forward to hearing more from you later on in This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, this year we had a face-to-face Consumer Electronics Show, or CES, once again. I wasn't there. Neither was anyone else from Twyatt, but the show did go on, even though the attendance was a little bit less than it had been in non-pandemic years. One of the interesting things, though, was that in addition to all of the consumer stuff that you would expect, given the name, there was some enterprise class technology at CES, including enterprise class security. I want to talk a little bit about some of the security that we saw there, especially because the two, consumer and enterprise, security areas are coming closer as more and more employees continue to work from their homes. One of the things that we saw was in IoT security from a company called Tuya. Now, it came into a couple of applications like Razer's RGB lighting system, came up with a smart home standard. But we want to talk about the Tuya Cube. It's a deployment solution designed to let developers create their own private IoT platform. And this includes a built-in secure element for data encryption and decryption and physical security storage. Also offers built-in root of trust, secure communications process and firmware verification, and multiple logical and physical protection layers. What we're seeing here is that Tuya is going where regulators and consumers, both individual and corporate, have been telling the IoT vendors they wanted to go for a while, which is a platform that is inherently somewhat more secure than the unpatchable, unchangeable platforms that have been deployed for so many years when it comes to IoT. Now, there's another company called Hummingbirds AI. It wants to eliminate the kind of data leaks that come from people snooping over laptop users' shoulders. Now, have you ever looked over the shoulder of another laptop user to see what was on their screen? I'll plead guilty. If nothing else, when you're walking up and down the aisles of a plane on the way to do, well, whatever it is you have to do at the back of the airplane, when you return to your seat, you're going to look over the shoulders of the people sitting in the aisle seats, and you're going to see what's going on their laptop screen, whether that is a game of solitaire or confidential company information. Hummingbirds has come up with what it calls Guacamole ID software, which is a continuous video-based identity verifications platform. Think about the kind of facial recognition that some of the smartphone companies are using to get you into the platform, but going on all the time to verify that the person whose face is visible from the laptop's webcam is the person who should be looking at the screen. Now, there are lots of ways to customize this, but I think it's fascinating to look at this as not only a biometric factor for authentication, but a continuous authentication. You know, we've always thought of user authentication as a moment in time, something that you do during boot, during logon. This is moving user verification to something that's a little bit closer to the zero trust model, where the user is being verified on a constant basis. Finally, I want to talk a little bit about Pluton. Microsoft's Pluton is a dedicated security chip. You know, in one of my blips, I talked about TPM, the Trusted Platform Module, that's nearly a decade old. Well, Microsoft engineers have noted that this is nearly a decade old. And believe me, threat actors have noted that it's a decade old as well. Pluton is intended to replace the TPM by storing and creating cryptographic keys, which are then applied against the OS and firmware to make sure that they haven't been tampered with. Pluton's designed to, well, minimize an attack surface that exists between TPM and the firmware and the operating system, because there are cracks in the boot sequence that can allow an attacker to get in. I want to bring my co-host in. Brian, we've talked about these three things: IoT, continuous user authentication, and a replacement for TPM. Is there one of these that you think has a chance to make a bigger impact than the others?
Well, I personally think that the Achilles heel of IoT in general is that they're trying to use, previously they've been trying to use as inexpensive a platform as possible. So Linux became a very big deal. Well, the problem is Linux was built and designed in a kinder, gentler world. And there's a definite need for a dramatically more secure platform. So I think hopefully any IoT platform that actually builds security in right at the very beginning, I think is going to have a huge, huge impact. Now, how big an impact, I think, is going to really depend on, unfortunately, the price. There's a lot of IoT devices out there that are based on Linux because they don't have to pay royalties. Sadly, they're using old distributions that have inherent problems in them. So I'm hoping someday those two kind of converge so that we can have a more secure platform. Will TPM or a TPM replacement make a big deal? It all depends on the toolkits, and we'll see. If the APIs and the toolkits, in order to utilize the secure boot process of TPM or TPM-like devices is hard to use. It's just going to sit on the shelf. I think education is going to be a big one. And I think I'm looking forward to it because realistically, I do quite a decent amount of IoT devices. And I'd like to be able to design in security right from the get-go.
No, I think designing in security is far better than applying security after the fact. And I agree with you. Pluton has potential, but it's going to depend on companies deploying it on the chips and the motherboards. Right now, the only response that Microsoft is showing is from AMD, and that has to be seen as somewhat lukewarm. AMD has not gone full into Pluton. So far, it's been nothing but silence from Intel. And you and I both know that if Intel doesn't embrace something at the processor and system level, it's going to be a niche player at best. You know, to me, one of the more profound possibilities out of these is the possibility of continuous authentication. You know, one of the things that we've tried for years to convince people to do is log off when they leave a system. This is especially important in applications like medical offices and hospitals, where a doctor or a healthcare professional will come in, log into one of the systems in an exam room, make notes, pull up customer record or pull up patient records, all that sort of stuff, and then often be called away on a very quick basis and not fully shut down their session before they leave. That leaves some sensitive information quite visible. But with this sort of continuous authentication, even if someone came into a live session, the webcam would note that the face in front of the system was not the authorized user and would make sure that it was shut down. I think that that is a very cool thing. And to be brutally honest, I think it's only a matter of time before we see other factors brought in, some behavioral factors and things like that to authenticate the user.
Actually, I want to toss in something.
Sure.
I had a chance to work with the Xerox PARC folks. And one of the technologies I saw, this was actually back in the 70s, for goodness sakes, they had pendants that would be riding along with their ID badges. And when one of the researchers would walk into their office, it would automatically shift their telephone calls into their office telephone set. It would automatically log them in or actually take their Xerox Star workstation out of sleep mode or so forth. And that was really, really cool. And basically, it was short-range RF. And they had little sensors that were in the drop ceiling. So as you moved around, so if I was, say, in someone else's office and a call came in for me, instead of ringing the phone in my office, it would actually, over the speaker, you know, the announcement speaker in the office I was in, go, "Mr. Chi, there's an incoming call. Would you like to take it?" And I would tap, you would tap the pendant and would automatically route the call to the nearest handset. That was great. And it was yet another idea from Xerox PARC that didn't go anywhere, or maybe we should say it was way ahead of its time. So I think the technology is there. I think the intellectual property is there. I think it just needs to be used, whether it is facial recognition or whether it's short-range RF. I agree. Some sort of continuous authentication is something we really and truly need. And I think it's time for people to start looking at those patents in their collection and say, let's go and dust it off and do some new products.
You know, it's fascinating that you mentioned that because it brings up something that we heard a lot about for a while, and that is the idea of presence, which is, as you point out, the system knowing where you are within an office building. And the idea, especially if your company is doing things like hoteling, where people don't have a permanent desk but are assigned a desk with each day that they come in, being able to have your phone calls, your designated work state virtual workstation brought there to your desk is critical. Now, the pandemic and everyone being hoteled at their home has quieted down a lot of that talk, but we're starting to see companies go back into the office, at least to a certain extent. And I think it's going to be fascinating to watch what happens with this idea of presence as we get to this hybrid work environment where, in many cases, an employee might work from home 3 days a week, go into the office 2 days a week. Is there a way for the system to recognize that they're at the office and follow them to a desktop without the user having to do anything about it? You know, if it can do that and do it securely, then I think it's made a great step forward. And it seems like we're getting close to this. I strongly suspect that what this involves is some very tight ties in with Active Directory and the other directory systems so that all of the user context is brought to a particular location with them, regardless of where they are. Well, that's going to be it for the Bites, because we want to have plenty of time to talk with our guests. This guest is a little bit unusual. Some the sort of systems, the sort of technology and its application that we haven't talked about a great deal here on TWiET, but it's the sort of thing that could have a huge impact on you in a lot of different ways. Before we bring in our guests, though, we want to go back and hear from Leo Laporte as he tells us about another TWiET sponsor.
If I might interrupt, this week's TWiET is brought to you by a name I'm sure you know, Progress. You know Progress, right? It's been enabling enterprise experiences for decades now. They've assembled technologies that will empower businesses to thrive in this new post-COVID world. You know, most companies just don't have the resources they need to invest in technology. Not as much anyway as the big guys, the digital Goliaths. If you're a smaller company, a medium-sized business, one like ours, you need to use technology to create differentiation, but you've got a smaller budget. You know, you don't have the money to spend that Meta does. Well, you can achieve this by turning to Progress as your trusted provider. With Progress, any organization can achieve that level of differentiation that's critical in today's business environment. Whether you're an IT professional looking to solve problems with networking and infrastructure, security, compliance, maybe you're enabling web and digital experiences, Progress has a solution in every arena. There's their MoveIt managed file transfer. You must know about this, right? This is so awesome. It gives you control, security, and visibility over all your file transfer activities. If you have to transfer confidential information, you're going to love this. You don't want the liability of putting that vital information out in the public. With a managed file transfer solution, MoveIt, you gain insight into who has access to your files, if the file was accessed, when, full control, no risk. There's also the What's Up Gold Networking Monitoring. Allows you to monitor networks, applications, and devices both in the cloud and on-prem. There's the Kemp Loadmaster Load Balancer. I love that name. Kemp, you know Kemp, next generation load balancing and application delivery for private, public, and hybrid clouds. There's Flowmon's Network Intelligence, a network performance monitor and a network detection and response solution. There's Sitefinity, that's their digital experience platform. All of it's under the umbrella of Progress. It's all about progress for you. Build digital experiences across channels that improve business agility, foster personal relationships with visitors with Sitefinity. Progress. They've got the technology you need to secure, analyze, and integrate your applications, networks, and processes. Find out more. Download a free trial. Progress.com/twit. Don't miss out now. Progress.com/twit. to it. In fact, they've got a Progress swag bag waiting for you right now. Who doesn't want swag? Progress.com/twit. Now back to This Week in Enterprise Tech.
Thanks, Leo. We appreciate that. And now it's time to bring in our guest. Today we're talking with Francesco Marconi, CEO of Applied XL, a company that has a new approach, they say, for sourcing and generating reliable information through the development of editorial algorithms that detect newsworthy events in continuous flows of raw data. I know that I am fascinated to hear about this and about Francesco. Francesco, welcome to TWiET. Can you tell me, first off, what is Applied XL?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, Curtis and Brian, thank you for having me on your show. So Applied XL is building information systems that are rooted in the processes that journalists use on a day-to-day basis to identifying noteworthy events within data. And so what we are specializing in is developing algorithms that encode those journalistic frameworks when mining data. That's why we call them editorial algorithms. And so this data that I'm talking about could really be anything, but focused a lot on text data. So think about reports from the government. We are doing a lot of work with clinical trials in drug regulation. And so the big goal of the company is to build better filtering systems and to combat information overload with a smart engine that can aid in the research and in analysis process of information.
All right, you've got a lot there that I want to hear more about. But first, I have to ask, looking at your bio a little bit, it lists journalists. So what was the path that brought you to the CEO's office? It seems like one that is a little bit unusual compared to the CEOs of a lot of tech companies.
Yeah, and in fact, I started my career as an economist. My first job out of university was as an economist at the United Nations. I initially moved to New York, and what I was doing at the UN was looking at programs related to technology transfer, technology and science transfer in developing nations. And during the course of that work, one of the main things that I looked at was the influence of media and information technology in democracy. More specifically, it was the time of the Arab Spring, and I just became fascinated, borderline obsessed with the relationship between technology, information, and sort of social and economic progress. And that really, opened my eyes to the world of journalism, but looking at it from a lens of almost like a quantitative science. So rather than focusing only on the storytelling aspect of it, trying to bring some ground truth, some analytical signals. And so from the UN, I transitioned to the Associated Press, where I was doing projects related to the implementation of new technology in the newsroom. So these were, tools for helping journalists mine data as well as automate the generation of information. And then from the Associated Press, I transitioned to the Wall Street Journal, where I was the R&D chief. And so the connecting tissue between what I'm doing now and what I was doing at these previous news organizations is that we were developing tools for better information filtering. In the case of the AP and the Wall Street Journal, the clients were essentially my colleagues in the journalists who were trying to be on top of different beats, either it be cover politics or finance or life sciences. And we developed systems for making that more accessible. You know, if you will, think about personalized news wires for each of these individuals. And so in early 2020, I decided to leave the Wall Street Journal and start Applied Excel with the goal of let's make these tools that are that, you know, the big newsrooms are using, that are very sophisticated tools for information gathering, and let's make them available to industry professionals as a business intelligence, you know, capability. And so long story short, I left my very nice, cushy job at the Wall Street Journal, and then the pandemic hit. So naturally, we gravitated towards doing a lot of work in tracking COVID data and, you know, the spread of the disease and the infection. And from there, we transitioned not only to track the diseases, but looking at the treatment landscape. And suddenly we opened our eyes to this incredible world of information, which is the world of clinical trials, drug regulation, FDA approvals, and so on, which is still dominated by companies that are, in a way, legacy. And so we are bringing these more cutting-edge approaches for identifying what's a noteworthy signal in the data.
All right. Well, you've talked about a particular use case, and I want to drill into that a little bit, and that's clinical research. I know that I did some work with writing grants for the various national health services and working on things like translational medicine, where you take the information from clinical research and give it to practitioners. You know, when you're seeing this, are you talking about the kind of tools that would help someone in, say, doing an academic literature review? Or are you talking about doing the kind of work that would help someone perhaps not need a journal to go to replace some of the academic journals or newsletters that fill the industry?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The reality is that the primary customer are biotech and pharma companies, specifically the business functions. So think about strategy, competitive intelligence, business development. And so if you go into one of these organizations, any of these organizations, they will have pretty sophisticated, you know, strategy departments. Business development, basically business functions, whose job is to monitor what's happening in the clinical trials and the clinical development landscape. So if you are a pharma company developing a drug for small cell lung cancer or treatment for small cell lung cancer, your job is to know what's new that is coming online, what are your competitors doing. And what you'll do is that you will analyze these signals and these updates to the clinical trials. And so when I speak about updates, I'm talking about things like the changes in the number of patients that are enrolled in a trial that has a very specific meaning. If you're, you know, suddenly you're increasing the number of patients in your trial, it might be a red flag that perhaps you're not getting the statistical significance that you were hoping for. Or you delay the clinical trial, or you anticipate the clinical trial completion. All of these movements in the data, and since it's a highly regulated industry, you have to file, you know, these updates to the Library of Medicine and the FDA and so on. All of these signals can give you insight in the strategic movement of your competitors or the companies they are trying to evaluate. The problem is that there are thousands and thousands of updates every single day. So not all updates are relevant. And so what we did is that we spent several months working with science journalists to essentially train algorithms on how to discern a noteworthy event. So a change in enrollment of patients, or the study stops early because of lack of funding. So there's many, many different types of micro events. We taught a machine how to think like a journalist. And again, the benefit is, the direct customer is the business functions at pharma companies, but obviously it's being used by academics and researchers to get that landscape view of what's happening in the clinical trial in clinical development space.
Outstanding. Well, we've got lots more to talk with Francesco Marconi, CEO of Applied XL, about. But before we do, we need to hear from Leo Laporte one more time to tell us about another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech.
One more time, kids. I want to interrupt because I want to talk about Nareva. Here we are, people coming back to the office. We've got to have kind of hybrid work environments. We often need big huddle rooms for staff meetings, for stand-ups. But the problem is audio, isn't it? You get a huddle room, you want people to be able to social distance. You want people to feel relaxed. You don't want everybody to have to stand on a spot so that the microphones can pick them up. And whatever, what you most don't want is to bring in some big AV company that's going to crawl all over the place with engineers, set up a hugely expensive system with microphones and speakers and wires everywhere. And then, of course, they've got to come back every week to tune the thing. And no one knows how to run it. That's just way too expensive. You need Nareva. What a simple solution. Choosing a traditional system is going to entail difficult, you know, decisions, lots of cost, a dizzying array of separate mics and speakers and DSPs. But with Nareva, it's a simple installation. In fact, it's so simple, you could do it yourself. One or two integrated microphone and speaker bars will serve an entire room. It's Nareva's patented microphone mist technology that puts thousands of virtual microphones everywhere in the room. So participants don't have to face anything. They can turn sideways. They can turn around. They can socially distance, which they want to do. No microphones to sanitize. And everyone's heard everywhere in the room, even in the biggest huddle rooms. This is so cool. You know I'm a stickler for good audio. Nareva is amazing. It's great for meetings, for classes. Your participants can move and talk naturally in the space and still be heard by the remote participants. You don't want people who are remote to feel like second-class citizens. You want them to be engaged, hear what's going on, be able to interact. Nareva can do all of that. And thanks to continuous audio calibration, your rooms are instantly and always ready with optimized audio, no outside technician required. You could do it all yourself. 30-minute DIY job. Watch the video. It's amazing. Big savings on time and cost compared to traditional systems. They've also simplified management, especially if you have multiple huddle rooms. Nareva console gives IT the power to monitor, manage, and adjust their systems from anywhere. So each conference room is kind of ready to go at any moment. And if there's any issues, even if your IT support staff is not on site, they can fix it. No need to go from room to room at all. So here's the question. Ask yourself, do you want to go with a costly, complicated traditional system just because that's what you've always done? Or are you ready to make the leap to the simple, economical system that actually works better? Nareva. Learn more at nareva.com. This is such a great idea for your conference rooms of any size. Nareva, N-U-R-E-V-A.com. All right, enough of me. Let's get back to This Week in Enterprise Tech, guys.
Hey, Francesco, Brian here. Hey, I just recently retired from the University of Hawaii as a researcher, and having research tools like what you're talking about sounds like a truly wonderful thing for the academic researcher. But I gotta ask, is it something that academics can afford? do I need to go and put in a big chunk of money into my research grant just so I can go and look and use your tool?
That's a great question. And so I think the same question applies to journalists, right? So where not a lot of news organizations, especially the local ones or smaller ones, will have the budgets that, you know, a big pharma or biotech company will have. So one of the things that we are focusing on as the company matures is to provide, you know, access to either researchers or academics or journalists, access to the tool for free. And in fact, we already started, you know, testing some of that in the sense that one thing that I didn't mention is that the way that we maintain the accuracy of these algorithms and these systems is through a process called human in the loop. And so human in the loop in the field of machine learning means that you have human checkpoints, you have people helping calibrate the machines. And so what that means is that, let's say we are automatically classifying a particular event in a clinical trial that, you know, stopped early because of lack of funding. We need human checkpoints, in a way, validators to say, okay, the machine got this, you know, this sample of data correct. And so we are inviting researchers, we are inviting academics, we are inviting journalists to be part of that process of human in the loop, which is very valuable to us in order to improve the platform. And in exchange, we are, you know, providing access to the platform. But I also think that the problem of access to reliable information and reliable technology is something very important to discuss, because what you see, particularly in the news world, which is the area I know well, is that there's a massive innovation gap between the large news organizations like, you know, the Wall Street Journal or the Washington Post or the New York Times, in the smaller newsroom. So you see the big news companies investing in the cloud, in artificial intelligence, in all of this technology that makes them incrementally more effective at gathering information, at building large audiences. And then on the other side of the spectrum, you see these smaller newsrooms that don't have access to technology. And I do think that the problem is not necessarily a cost barrier or price barrier. It's more access to knowledge. And so that's why, you know, things like, you know, education, collaborations with academic institutions are crucial. And, you know, not a lot of news organizations have access to it. But I think that, you know, also speaks to your question and broader concern of, will I have, as a researcher, will I have money to pay for these sophisticated tools?
Why don't I go one step a little further? My wife used to be the university librarian at Hawaii Pacific University. Might I suggest you talk to people like the American Library Association, because those are the original information professionals, and they have to fork out large, large sums of money for things like Gartner and so forth. What I would like to do is ask you, what kind of attribution are you requiring? I did a fast web search and I found you mentioned in a story by the New York Times, and I also saw you mentioned in Taylor and Francis online. What are the attribution requirements that you're asking for?
So you mean in terms of, you know, using our data and then attributing it to Applied Excel, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really part of the model of, well, we really want to provide reliable information to news organizations and researchers. And whenever we can, we provide data for stories and research. In exchange, we ask for, you know, for attribution. So, you know, this data or this insight or this analysis was derived from Applied Excel. And that has, you know, tremendous benefits to us, you know, beyond the public impact. At the end of the day, that's the most powerful form of content marketing, which is seeing our data, our insights in action with reliable journalism. So it's really a win-win situation. So we've been doing some collaborations with news organizations. To your point, also providing some data for scientific research, and you know, we believe we can build a pretty healthy and profitable business by engaging with customers who do have the budgets to, you know, to access the technology. And for sectors like journalism or academia, we are trying to look for ways to provide them provide access to this information and tools.
Well, Francesco, it sounds to me like what you're doing could be stated as applying journalistic techniques and the principles of journalism, especially data journalism, to a wider variety of fields. So you're not trying to replace journalists. You're not trying to convince people that they don't need we ink-stained wretches, but you're taking the classic journalism approaches and applying it more broadly. Is that a reasonable thing to say?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, the field is called computational journalism, which is merging techniques from data science and machine learning with journalism. And so on one end, you have you know, the reliability and you know, the grounding of journalism. And on the other side, you have the scale of technology. And to your point, the goal is not to automate journalism or to replace journalists. This is just another tool in, you know, in the portfolio of tools that journalists have at their disposal. Of course, there's, you know, when we start talking about AI entering the news world, the question of that journalists often ask is, will the AI come into the newsroom and steal my job? And the short answer is no. It's the same way, and of course there's reluctancy to adoption and there's fear, but that's natural with any new technology that is introduced in an industry like journalism. And if you actually go through the history of technology in the news space, you see this recurring pattern all the way from the introduction of the typewriter, where people were concerned that they would be replaced, or the computer, or even the telephone. But the reality is that these tools are trying to achieve something, which is increase access to information, make it faster, and create networks of trust. And so I think that's the promise of this new field of AI and machine learning applied to journalism. And I think it comes at a time where we need transparency in the system. So we've been thinking, you know, on the first segment of the show, you had, you know, fascinating examples of issues related to privacy and transparency. And so this is the time for folks who have, you know, an editorial perspective that are focused on transparency and on these standards to help shape, you know, technology. And so it's making it more more balanced and more human-centric.
More balanced and more human-centric. Both of those things sound mighty good. Well, this has been a fascinating conversation. I've enjoyed hearing about this, and I'm looking forward to following the development of the platform and the company. But we have unfortunately come close to the end of our time for today. Before we end, though, Want to give you a chance to tell our listeners where they can learn more about Applied Excel and how they might go about getting a hands-on opportunity with the technology.
Yeah, absolutely. So for any of your listeners interested in learning more about our company, they can visit AppliedExcel.com. As I mentioned, our first vertical or our first area of focus is life sciences, so biotech and pharma. But the broader mission of the company is to be able to anticipate disruptions to the health of people, places, and planet. And so those are our verticals where we start with information that can impact the health of people, so the treatment landscape. Health of places has to do with supply chain, local economies, and then eventually the health of planet will enter into energy and climate impact in ESG. So we have a long journey ahead of us, but an exciting one. And I hope some of your listeners can join us on this journey.
Thank you very much. We've been talking with Francesco Marconi, CEO of Applied Excel. We thank him for being our guest today and look forward to hearing more from Francesco and Applied Excel in the future. And thanks to you for spending time with This Week in Enterprise Tech, your source for all that matters in the world of enterprise technology each and every week. Before we go, I want to get back to my co-host, Mr. Brian Chee. Brian, what do you have on tap for the coming week, and where can people find out about you and your varied activities?
I'm going to be playing electrician. The joys of finding things that need to be fixed, upgraded, or whatever in a used house. But that's all right. Anyway, I love hearing from you folks. And yes, I've been getting notes from you folks, and I like them. Anyway, for those of you listening to the show, from especially the download users, don't be afraid to send me a question in your native language. Just beware that I'm going to be using Microsoft or Google or something like that to do the translation. So have patience if my translation response to you is a little clumsy, but we'd love to hear from you anyway. And you know what? I'm ADVNETLAB on Twitter. We'd love to hear from you there. Throw it at me. You're also more than welcome to throw me an email. I'm Cheebert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv. Or you're also welcome to throw an email at twit.tv, which will hit all the hosts. That does include our curmudgeon, Oliver Rist, who is apparently working on some really, really cool projects. Can't wait. Anyway, love to hear from you, and stay safe, everybody.
Staying safe is the order of the day. We appreciate it. Of course, you can follow me on Twitter at KG4GWA and find me at omdia.com or darkreading.com. Well, for all of us here at This Week in Enterprise Tech, thank you for being with us. You know, we say it every time, but because it's true, we could not and would not do this without you. We appreciate our audience, appreciate your input, and appreciate the time that you give us to watch and listen to our words. We'll look forward to seeing you next week. Until then, remember, if you want to keep up with everything that matters in enterprise tech, just keep quiet.
No ads, just the content. That's what you get when you join Club Twit. You even get extras like Twit Plus, our new bonus feed just for members, and exclusive access to the Club Twit Discord community. Join now for just $7 a month and support Twit as we continue to create top-notch podcasts you expect and deserve. Go to twit.tv/clubtwit to learn more. And sign up now. Thanks.